You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stopped, opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text SUNNY to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text SUNNY to 200-300. That's SUNNY to 200-300. SUNNY to 200-300.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
It's a little wet for practice, don't you think? Don't the girls have schoolwork to do?
They do their homework. Tundi's first in her class. Lynn and Isha are too.
Now I don't even mind you saying we hard on these kids. You know why? Because we are. That's our job, to keep them off these streets. You want to check on the kids? Let's check on the kids. We got future doctors, lawyers, plus a couple tennis stars in this house.
The chances of achieving the kind of success that you're talking about is just very, very unlikely.
Okay, you're making a mistake, but I'm gonna let you make it. Watch him hit a few balls.
All right, so tell me your names again.
I'm Venus.
I'm Serena.
So what'd you think?
All right, we are now joined by Amin Alhassan, Howard Bryant. I'm Kate Fagan. That was the trailer for the new movie, King Richard, starring Will Smith, about Richard Williams, father of Venus and Serena Williams. And there is the movie itself to talk about, how it holds up, the critical review of the movie. And then there is the real life story. Howard, since tennis is right in your wheelhouse, will you kick us off? Which part of that do you want to dive into first? The movie itself or the story that the movie is about?
Well, I think the first thing for me is that this is something that people have been talking about for a long time. I think it was about a year ago or so, maybe even a little more. There were whispers that Will Smith was playing Richard Williams. And I was like, whoa, of course. And then the first thing that hit me was, if Will Smith is playing Richard Williams, and this has got to be, he's joining the canon of the black man who plays everybody. So I'm like, because Richard Williams looks nothing like Muhammad Ali, who looks nothing like Bennett Amalu. But okay, I digress. I thought that thinking about the movie when I watched it, I always take the position that if you're going to enjoy a movie, you have to trust the director, and the director is taking you on a journey. And the minute you decide that you're not on board with what the director is doing, the movie's going to lose you. And are we playing spoilers here? Or are we just talking?
You know what? We'll put a spoiler right here. So for anybody who hasn't seen King Richard,
let me just say this right now. It's impossible to have spoilers for a true story. Guess what? Titanic, the boat sinks. JFK, he gets shot. Like
you can absolutely have spoilers for how it went. You know, it's not like, oh, did they make it? Did they become good players?
Yeah, you don't know if Jack and Rose are going to fall in love.
Exactly.
Will they survive?
You know, I mean, maybe Serena and Venus, maybe they didn't quite get there. I don't know, right? you've got to be on board with where the director's taking you. And so you try to go into it with an open mind, knowing full well that you know the story. And I think that the biggest issue that I had with the movie, not to immediately start criticizing, but the arc of the story is Richard Williams having a dream of his daughters being prodigies as tennis players. And the bookend of the movie is him taking them to the tennis court to play to Venus's first match in Oakland in 1994, her first professional match. That's it. So it's essentially a 5-year window, maybe 4 or 5 year window of the movie. And if that, and that in of itself as a director's choice makes for a very interesting and difficult watch at times, because the Williams sisters' story goes on long after that. Obviously, Serena is not even a pro when the movie ends. So the Will Smith performance, when people had talked about this, they had really talked about this as like being an Oscar vehicle for him. And for me, I was just wondering, how do you make a choice of a movie about these two phenomenal world-class, my argument is, and we can debate this, they're the two greatest siblings ever to play professional sports. How does that story not exist as professionals? So immediately I had issues with it. I think Will Smith was good. I think he did everything he could to sort of give Richard Williams dignity. But I also understand the movie in its time. We are in a time right now where we're trying to tell stories that give uplift, that give dignity and all of those things. But I do feel like, as the story goes, if you're coming to this movie for the Venus and Serena Richard Williams story that we know, this isn't it.
Yeah. You know, the crazy thing is, A, I was shocked by how narrow the scope is. Howard, I think you gave them a little bit of a pass by saying 5 years.
Yeah.
It seemed to be even smaller than that, because Venus and Serena are already playing tennis and are already pretty good at it, just not getting the right looks. So I think it's closer to about like 3.5 years there. But the other thing was, I just thought about this in after we had our conversation yesterday where we were preparing for this topic. I don't have any idea what their relationship, Venus and Serena's, with their father is, other than yes, daddy.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. It's a movie about Richard Williams. It's not a movie about Venus and Serena. But that would seem to be the most important relationship in his life. You know, no disrespect to his wife or his other children. But the reason why we know who he is because of those two particular daughters. And so for his entire relationship with them to be boiled down to, girls, do this. Yes, daddy. And that's it. It's pretty shocking when you think about it. It goes beyond, you know, just paint by numbers or trying to be uplifting or noble. It's kind of cheapened and demeaned to just reduce. I mean, I have 3 kids, and I know that if someone were to tell the story about my relationship with my kids, it wouldn't be yes, daddy. It would be all of these kind of conflicts and things you want to do. I mean, I guess there's a little bit of that where Venus wants to go pro, and Richard is kind of pulling back on her playing in tournaments, but it's so fleeting of a moment. The rest of the movie's kind of glossed over. Okay, you wrote a book about your relationship with your father. Like, can you imagine if it was just boiled down to, and then I said, yes, daddy.
It would have been a pamphlet is what it would have been. It would have been a pamphlet. But yeah, I think that even if we're allowing for the fact that this movie's is about Richard Williams, it's called King Richard for a reason. And I can also allow for the fact that if we go all the way into Venus and Serena's Wimbledon and all of those majors, from a strictly movie making point of view, that's really expensive to do. So if you're looking at, okay, we have to narrow down, we want to do this timeline, and we're focusing on this person in this story, even as I'm watching King Richard, I'm still left with so many questions about what motivated the linchpin of this story. I mean, the main character outside of the actual humans in it was, quote unquote, the plan.
Yeah.
That was talked about repeatedly, that as someone who is not enmeshed in tennis the way Howard you are, I assumed from the way they were talking about it was an actual document that was revisited time and time again, the way that it was talked about, this quote unquote plan. And you had glimpses of what the plan was based on the way Richard would interact with Venus and Serena and with his wife and with the various tennis aficionados that they would come in contact with. But what was never understood, at least as I was watching, it was like, where did this plan get solidified? What was the germ of the idea that led to the writing of the plan? What was the cultural and social assessment that Richard Williams went through before Venus and Serena were even born that led him to say, tennis is what my girls are going to play for XYZ reasons, and here's why I'm motivated, here's why it can work? And I thought that would have added like a tapestry of richness to understanding the social cultural piece of the tennis aspect and the collision of Venus and Serena with the tennis world. And I felt that that was missing from the movie.
Yeah, I think that they gave one sentence to it in the movie where Richard says he was watching TV and saw a woman get a $40,000 check to play tennis. That's the only piece of the movie that even discusses why they played tennis in the first place. The real story, having talked to Richard about this at Wimbledon several years ago, it's actually really sort of funny because while he was telling me this, I'm thinking, well, this is some master race shit, but okay, let's go for it. Right. He was talking about how in the 70s, he was watching tennis and he was watching what a waify white woman sport it was. And how the game had no athleticism and it didn't look like basketball and it didn't look like track. And he was like, if you put black athleticism on this game, those girls would dominate. He's like, they would absolutely dominate. And then you see how much they get paid for it too. He's like, imagine if you took a Florence Griffith Joyner or a Jackie Joyner Kersee or a Wilma Rudolph and put them on the tennis court against, you know, these girls wearing these pretty dresses, you could really change the entire game. That's the reason why he saw an advantage. He saw an advantage. He's like, I don't think my girls would have the same advantage if I put them on a track, you know, track and field. They'd be running up against the same athletes as them. But this sport, if I can teach them the basics, if I can teach them the technique, because tennis is not a pickup sport, you have to be taught how to play it, then they would have a huge advantage. It's not that different from Sebastian and Tony Nadal deciding that Rafa should be, you know, a lefty because lefties have more of an advantage. Rafa Nadal is right-handed. I mean, so he saw an advantage having, you know, by putting the quote unquote black athleticism into this white country club sport.
I'm starting to see why they didn't go too far back in the past. And they're playing tennis. We're just starting with them playing tennis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because, I do, now that you've explained it that way, I can see how that would be a tricky thing to try to get across in the movie. And there's certain moments in the movie, and as a person who understands sports, I can infer that was quote unquote part of the plan. But as you tell that story, I just find it so compelling that you look around our world, both sports and not sports, and every little nook and cranny that hasn't been exploited from a business perspective gets exploited. Yeah. And, you know, whether it's like, oh, we, you know, handheld duster with this thingamajig gets into this corner of your house, let me go put that on the shopping network. Like, you have that at every turn with capitalism. And yet it's so interesting to me that we get all the way to the late 90s and you've got the sport that, as a young woman growing up, all of the athletes I knew, women, we would always look at tennis and we would say, why did we not play tennis?
Yeah.
Because it's the only sport where you can, up until the last probably 10 years, you could make money, legitimate money.
Yeah.
And there was a legitimate platform. And so to have a tennis world where the barriers to entry are significant, and they're certainly greater than other sports, but they're not as extreme as like skiing or, you know, crew or other.
No, they're pretty extreme.
But you even saw in King Richard that you could at least go find a court somewhere.
Yes.
You have to have some resources to be able to have, you know, rackets and balls, certainly. But it is, as far as accessibility to a sport, it's not like the worst of the worst, except for the infrastructure that has been put up around it, which is, like, to me, the gatekeepers of tennis have created a barrier to entry that's greater than just the simple game itself.
It doesn't need to be there, in other words. It is a cult. The barriers to entry in tennis are cultural. They're not inherent to the sport itself. Right. They've decided that this is going to be an extremely expensive sport. And baseball is that now. But what I found really interesting about that, too, I thought one of the things that the movie did a good job of was creating that sort of class culture around it. Like when there's scenes when Richard's walking through the country club and they're all treating him like he's the butler. You know, they don't even want to shake his hand. They're like he's like the homeless guy who's walking around asking for change. And like, he's trying to explain to them, I got a plan. I'm trying to hand you a couple of players. And they did that. They did a really good job of that, because this country club thing, it wasn't just race. It's also class, that you don't belong here anyway. There's no possible way that you could fit in here. And there's no possible way that you could have something of value to us. And so those were parts of the movie that I actually tended to like. And I did think, too, when you're looking at that sport, part of the reason why tennis has always had the issues that it's had is because it can't decide if it really wants to be a sport. Does it want to be a country club pastime where you just kind of, you blow off a little steam and everybody plays and then we go have drinks after? Or is it going to be a sport with rigorous training and you know, a regimen and all of those different things that you put into in the other team sports? And so part of the enjoyment of watching how tennis sort of evolves is that sort of cultural battle itself, because what that's going to do is that's going to determine who gets to play.
The other thing I thought they captured there, which is an interesting nuance, is part of it is, yes, this cultural and class barrier to entry. But part of it also is that Richard sounds insane.
Yes.
I got the two Michael Jordans of tennis. Can we blame anybody? I'm sure, again, there are a lot of factors why the Williams sisters were overlooked. And chief among them are, you know, they were in an excluded population, right? But also, there's a level of, yeah, I mean, he just sounds crazy. Why are we mad at people who are like, yeah, the guy who just walked in off the street and says he's got the two best tennis players in the world, maybe not going to listen to him.
Yeah.
Not gonna take him seriously.
And as if we don't have a history of parents in sports pitching their children as the next so-and-so and going out of their way, doing what Richard Williams did in every sport, that is an epidemic that happens in sports. So it's like both, you can see in King Richard both, but there's like the class and race issues. And then there's also just parents in sports issues where people are just rolling their eyes as well.
This is the part that terrifies me more than anything. That this is going to make the helicopter parents double down. Richard did it, and he was right, and everyone said he was wrong, and he proved them wrong. And so I've got to do the Todd Marinovich crazy parent thing, Jake Shuttlesworth, my kid up at 2 a.m. doing suicides. What kind of house are you going to buy your mom? Whatever house she wants. How many people is this going to inspire to go deeper into this mania?
Yeah, I thought that what was great about that, too, was if you're just looking at Richard, and let's not forget that knowing what we know now, which is sort of the interesting part about going back to this, knowing what we know now, you go back and you think about Earl Woods. You know, Earl Woods was out there telling everybody, I'm creating a super athlete here. And all kinds of people tried to follow the Tiger Woods on the Mike Douglas show and the whole thing that he was going to create from sheer will, a child who was going to, what did Earl say? Was going to move mountains, right? Earl Woods is doing the same thing. And one of the things, I'm sorry, Richard Williams was doing the same thing before Earl Woods, or right around the same time. And what I found even more interesting about that, as well as the film went on, is, and also knowing the story, is in general, they're not wrong. I mean, Richard Williams, the remarkable thing about the Serena and Venus story and Richard's story is that they actually did create an entirely new path that can't really, in my opinion, be duplicated, which is why it's been really interesting to me that people, after this movie came out, people were talking about the LeVar Ball comp, which is insane. They're not even close to the same thing. There's no barrier to entry for black boys to play basketball. But from a race class standpoint, and also from a standpoint of how do you learn how to play this sport? Why would you bet on Richard Williams? It does sound pretty crazy that not only would he be able to do this with one, but two, and not just have them be good players, but to be two of arguably the top 10 or 15 players of all time. I mean, Serena is the greatest player of all time, and Venus is easily in there in that same, you know, within those that rank.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
One thing that I had a tough time holding these two ideas in my head while watching the movie is, on one side, you've got Richard Williams with the plan, and he has written out the future of his daughters, and he has them, rain or shine, hitting tennis balls, practicing, going hard in this typical fashion that we see in sports of a parent who wants to live out their dream through their child. And then, so we've got that one version of Richard Williams. And then on the other hand, we've got the version of him where we see during those couple years where he pulls Venus out of juniors and he doesn't let her compete because he wants them to learn and go enjoy life, you know, study, learn other languages, all of this well-rounded athlete focus. And I don't see those two things existing inside of the kind of parent that often is the one who is propelling their child to be, you know, destiny or the next great one. And I thought that was really interesting. Either it was a result of the movie being dictated by the Williams family and wanting this approach to be highlighted, either, or it's complete bullshit, right? I don't know, because it seems odd that a parent both has the master plan and also is focused on the well-being, because those two things don't necessarily coincide.
I mean, Howard, you were talking about this yesterday, that's real, like that he, I guess, I don't want to say scared straight, but the Jennifer Capriati issues really heavily influenced his decision to handle their development that way.
Well, I think that the most accurate piece of the movie was the way they showed the juniors and the youths competing with each other. I mean, every parent I saw them, like, I've met you before. I've met you before. I've met you before. Okay, great. You got your butt with no handshake. I've met you before. Okay, you're going to sit there and throw your racket and your parents are going to encourage that. I've seen you before. That part was really accurate. And I think that the piece of it in Richard's case, I remember talking to him about this once, and he was saying that while the other kids were playing juniors, you know what I was teaching my girls? And I was like, what? And he said, physics. He says, I was teaching them physics because I wanted them to realize that this is a game of angles and power. And that if you understand the geometry of the game, now all you have to do is execute it. He says, but a lot of these kids are out there trying to play the game without understanding it. He says, so what I wanted to do was to pull them back and have them understand what they were doing so they could actually go do it. It was also interesting when you think about Richard and and his kids. I think they were all homeschooled. I don't know if they ever went to public school. They don't. So in the movie, it doesn't show them in school. And so this is also part of the tennis plan. If you're going to be a tennis player, you are essentially pulled out of the general population.
Right.
And you never get to be a kid anyway.
Right. You know, they make a mention when the Child Protective Services shows up.
And when the neighbor across the street calls CPS on him.
Yeah. And
spoiler alert.
Mrs. Williams says, Mrs. Williams says they get their homework done. They're not neglecting any part of their other part of their lives outside of athletics. So there is a reference to that. But the question that I guess I would have is, you know, first of all, you're right. The life of a tennis prodigy is really weird. I'm good friends with Prim Sarupapat. She was a sports center anchor at ESPN. And now she's, I believe she's getting her doctorate in psychology. But Prim was a tennis prodigy before all of that. And she was supposed to be peers with many of the big names. She went down to IMG, and she's from a small town in Missouri, and literally her family had to split up. Her mom came down with her to Florida. She goes there, and she basically went to IMG Academy to learn how to be a tennis player. And she talks about kind of like it was a wild life, because these kids are out there and they are not beyond like, oh, it's not the same as regular high school or regular, you know, elementary school. But also there's a level of, you know, we talk about the substance abuse issues that Capriati went through. That happens a lot, and it starts at a young age, and it starts in these environments. And so, again, kudos to Richard Williams for insulating his daughters from not only a tough neighborhood growing up in Compton, but also a very different kind of tough neighborhood when you're down there in Florida among all these other tennis prodigies.
What I also, when we were talking earlier about the gap between the what we know about the Williams sisters' story and the Richard story and what we saw on the screen, it really is an interesting choice and what you choose to emphasize in the film. And I think that, to your point, you're making a movie called King Richard, and yet there wasn't a whole lot of backstory about who he was and where he came from. It was more of him talking about what was taking place. You know, this world has never respected Richard Williams, but they're going to respect y'all and the whole thing. So there was this, but you would have thought that there was going to be. Did you feel like you knew him by the end of the movie? Did you feel like you, I mean, to Amin's point, you certainly didn't feel like you knew the relationship between him and his daughters. Clearly, he and Serena were a little bit more simpatico. You could sort of tell that. But these different pieces of when you walk out, and also you're making an investment. 2 hours and 24 minutes for a tennis movie. That's a pretty long chunk right there. And these are the types of things you walk away from wondering, okay, did I understand this character at the end?
Ironically, I mean, when you were talking about that life of a tennis prodigy, it very much mirrors the life of a child actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ironically, yep. Because we're talking about a Hollywood movie about tennis prodigies, and there's that same kind of path that child actors walk and then young athlete prodigies walk, which is being taken out of just the everyday kind of play that happens, as well as the socializing that happens in school form. And those two things are very parallel. And I would also say that, like, I don't know if we have data around it, but it doesn't seem anecdotally that child prodigies in Hollywood end up in great places all that frequently. And then similarly, sports child prodigies aren't often all that successful, adding more, I don't know what it is, credence to the fact that both Venus and Serena not only were child prodigies, not only went through that path that child prodigies went through, and then on the back end, won all of the things that were predicted they would win.
Let me ask you guys this, though. Is it true for all child athlete prodigies, or is this something more acute in the individual sports? Because I think the chances of a kid who's great at basketball, who ends up as a professional basketball player, being a somewhat normal person, are much higher than a kid who's great at tennis, who ends up becoming a professional tennis player, because of the isolation that you get in as a single player, right?
Yeah, it's the isolation, and it's also it's the sport itself, because it's not a pickup sport. You can't just teach yourself how to serve. You don't teach yourself how to hit forehands. There is a way to actually hit a tennis ball. Whereas we look at basketball players, whether it's Larry Bird or Jamal Wilkes or Steph Curry, you can teach yourself how to shoot a basketball. Eventually, if the ball goes in the basket, you'll probably stick with that, and guys will tweak your delivery a bit. But there's not one way for everybody to shoot a basketball. When you watch somebody serve, they're all pretty much serving the same way. At contact point, it's all pretty much the same. And so tennis is a very technical sport. And also, because tennis is not a public sport, because tennis has a culture of being a private country club sport, then yeah, they whisk you away. You're not, all of the best training is private. All of the people that you're going to meet, it's private. All the money is private. So it's not like you're going to be a star on the basketball team, and then you're going to go to a college and go play, and you're going to be around a whole bunch of people. It's all very, very isolating and isolated. And so, when Prim In fact, it was funny with Prim. Remember, we were at Wimbledon back in 2015, 2016. She went out and started hitting balls with us, and I was like, oh my God. And then she explained that, yeah, she was, you know, she went to Duke and she was a great player. I'm looking at her hit and I'm going, yeah, okay, you're a pro. You can always tell somebody who's got, you know, plus talent. And so what was wild about this was, you know, as a film, I thought the film actually did a really good job with Will Smith walking around knowing that this was the world he had to enter if they were going to be good. He didn't go to the high school and say, hey, I got a couple of players here you need to develop. He didn't go to the YMCA and say, hey, you know, he knew exactly that you had to go to the private country club pipeline. You had to get into that because that's where the players come from.
Question for you, Howard. As someone who played basketball, if I ever watch a basketball movie, and I mean, you probably feel this way too, very clearly pinpoint things that are just complete bullshit that would never happen.
Exactly.
And like, I forget what the name of the movie with Queen Latifah and Common was, but the very basic.
Just right.
Common, just right with a W. And I'm not saying Common isn't good at basketball, but there would be scenes where it was like, that is obviously not an NBA player, or interactions that would be happening with a front office, or things that, as you write a script and you need dramatic turning points, you just bake them into the sport, even though they wouldn't exist. Was there anything like that in this movie? Like and here I'm thinking of like the open stance, which was a through line of the movie that Richard wanted them to hit open stance versus closed stance. Were there parts of the movie where, as someone who knows tennis really well, you were just shaking your head like, that's not how it would go down?
Well, actually, I thought they did the tennis really well. I mean, that was the part that I was like, wow, this, whoever did this paid attention to their advisors. And usually when you're looking at sports, the one thing we know about sports, actors and sports don't mix, right? Whether we're looking at Charlie Sheen in Major League or Corbin Burnson, or you're looking at Tim Robbins in Bull Durham or Shia LaBeouf in Borg versus McEnroe, actors do not do sports. Right? They don't do sports. You can always tell. And, but what I thought was fascinating, what they did a really good job of, was talking about the difference in the change that and it's one of the areas that was really, really well done, but also one of the greater disappointments in the film, is that Venus and Serena really did change how this sport was played. They really did. Pam Shriver was a big hitter at one point. Steffi Graf could hit the ball. Lindsay Davenport's a good hitter. But these two, the level of power that they had, and the difference between open and closed stance, you're supposed to keep your stance closed because the more open your stance is, the less power you get. You don't have your front foot forward, all your body's not going forward. But the combination of who they were and the power that they brought to the sport, and also the change in the technology, the change in the rackets, the change in the strings, now you can get away with that stuff. It's just like in basketball, where, you know, they used to tell you, that you can't put the ball between your legs when you're switching directions, and you can't. But now that you can carry the ball and you can palm it, you can do all these different things. Guys have different handles today than they had when we were growing up. The dribbling in of a basketball is very, very different than when I was growing up playing basketball. And so they did the technical stuff really, really well. And I was kind of cringing because I was waiting for the sport part of it to bring the movie down. They did a fantastic job. Wow. Both of the girls, Demi Singleton as Serena, they really, really did a good job on that. It was a surprise.
Well, they didn't have to waste any time on acting lessons and the interaction with their father. So the only line is yes, daddy. Yes, daddy. We can spend a lot of time on the tennis court polishing that up. Now, Kate, it's funny because that's every time I watch, particularly, I can't watch any movie about basketball because forget about like the front office stuff where I'm like, okay, that never happens. It's just watching them play basketball. It's so obvious they don't play basketball. I think of Kevin Bacon in The Air Up There, looking at his hand and hopping around as he dribbled. I was like, why would you cast him for this role? Or why would you have a scene, more importantly, that involves him playing basketball? Let's just accept that he's a basketball coach and never have him actually play basketball. But one thing that I wanted a payoff on, and I was kind of disappointed we didn't get, there was one quick little mention of, hey, what's all the commotion over there? Oh, it's this girl, Anna Kournikova. She's going to go pro. And I was like, okay, here we go. And they never, I mean, again, because even within the context that this is a movie about Richard, That was one of Richard's big things. You guys love her and she's never won shit. And meanwhile, my girls are dominating. The fact that that was not even addressed or touched. Oh,
well, this is the whole thing with this movie. And this is what I mean about the journey. When you are going to watch a movie, you have to believe in the journey that the director is going to take you on. And in this movie, clearly, I mean, the director didn't keep you. You're like, yeah, I'm not buying what you're selling. And to me, I'm in the same boat, because the Williams sister's story is way more interesting than what's on screen. It's way more, it's way broader. It's way bigger. There was no reason for it to be as narrow as it was. I mean, and even if you wanted to talk about the race and the racism that they had to go through, the two issues that I had with the movie in terms of scope, one was that the racial issues that Venus and Serena went through and that Richard went through, all of that legit. Anybody who's Black, who's walked into, you know, an all white, foreign, hostile territory, they can feel the needles go off the record. That stuff was real and they did a good job of that. But the part that they didn't do nearly enough on was the fact that these two players changed the entire sport. Mm-hmm. There are very few people in any sport that you can say they changed how this whole thing was played. Right. And that the scenes that you had, and if they were thinking, OK, well, we'll do this from a coming of age area, and so it's more compelling. I would much rather have seen, you know, Venus and Serena go at it with Martina Hingis and, you know, on court, because they don't like Venus's beads and Serena's beads falling off of the court. All those microaggression things that we all know about. They didn't bring up Indian Wells, that the movie ended 7 years before Indian Wells. I thought that one of the most compelling things you were going to get in that movie was the fact that you had something that I don't know if I can think of off the top of my head that can be duplicated. That world number one Venus gets replaced by your sister at the world number one, and that these two players are one and two in the world. And then on top of that, because of the way tennis goes, now they got to play each other. And I'm thinking, why isn't this on screen? And then when that part of it is done, now they team up and kick your ass in doubles. I mean, these two were unbelievable. They were the most feared duo in tennis for a decade.
I mean, hell, I made the point that even a story about Richard's life prior to the birth of Venus and Serena sounds a lot more interesting. Hell, he kept giving us exposition about it all through the movie. Like, oh, this when I was growing up in Louisiana and this and that, I'm like, why don't they show this? Why are they just expositioning us to death here? But I want to go back to something you brought up earlier, Howard, when you said people are making the comparison to LeVar Ball and you don't see it. And I think the through line there, the connective tissue, is that, A, again, big personalities, right? Loud and unabashed in what seems like overpraise of their children.
And overconfidence, yes.
And overconfidence, right? And then, second of all, on some level, I'll bet Richard Williams way more successful. Look, to say that I have three sons, two of them are in the NBA. One of them is a pretty good starter. The other one looks like he's going to be a star. And the third one is a fringe NBA player in the minor leagues. Even if he hadn't said a word, that's pretty freaking impressive.
Yeah.
And I think those are the parts that people gravitate to. But
is it?
I think that's what people are gravitating when they're making that comparison. But I think the big thing for me when you talk about both the story of Richard Williams and the story of LeVar Ball is because of their success, albeit to different degrees, people begin to rubber stamp all of their methods. Everything they did was the right way to do it. Why? Look at the results. And I have a problem with that, because I can look at what LeVar Ball did and say there were things that he did that absolutely shaped and led to the success that his kids have had in their chosen profession. And then there are things that I think he royally screwed up. And so I guess when you guys watched that movie, was there anything you saw that was like, all right, it worked out in the end, obviously, but he probably shouldn't have done this or should have handled this differently?
Well, the question that I kept, or the idea that I kept coming back to while watching the movie was, who is producing this movie? who is the executive producer of this movie? And, you know, Venus and Serena, yes, and it's about the it's the life rights of Richard Williams and the family having a fingerprint all over the movie. And to me, I mean that dovetails with your question in being that I didn't see a whole lot that was questionable that Richard Williams did, because it seemed to me that they did this thing that I think we all do as humans, where if someone's like, name your worst quality, you name your third worst. You know, you never name your worst worst. Okay. You don't name your worst.
You name a strength and you call it a weakness. Like, right. Oh, I care too much.
Right. Yes. But if someone's like, what's the worst thing about you? A couple things spring to mind, and you're just, well, some people might be more forthcoming than me, but usually I name something down the list. And it felt like that movie was doing that. Like, there were moments where, you know, he's pulling away from the convenience store, getting ready to leave Venus Serena and the girls at the store to prove a point. Or he's about to make them watch, was it Cinderella again? Yeah. And so there were these nods to the fact that sometimes his methods went overboard. But they didn't seem egregious to me, right? They were sort of like, kindly overboard. Yeah. They were soft overboard. And then I kept coming back to the simple fact that, well, the family has its fingerprints all over us. And that's not to say that doesn't make it better in a lot of ways, because there's probably a lot more truth and realness in some of these moments and these details. But at the same time, I don't know that you're getting the gritty rawness of what, you know, the gray area of what it actually means to be human and to be Richard Williams.
Howard, let me ask you this question. This came up yesterday and it reminded me of another conversation I've had a lot. You mentioned that we're in an era now where we're getting more black content, but it has to be noble and uplifting. And in many ways, that can sometimes cheapen the experience because it makes it feel plastic like Disneyland as opposed to a very real gripping story. Are we, I mean, not allowed, but is it cool to question and demand more? Because one of the conversations I've had that reminds me of this is the idea that, you know, I do the podcast Cinephobe where we review movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes. Try to ascertain whether they're poorly rated or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. It's Cinephobe, produced by Anthony Mays, wherever you get podcasts. But I always get uneasy when I'm about to critique hard either a black movie or a black actor or a black director, because I feel like we have so few opportunities in this space. Am I doing the Enos Kanter?
Yeah, you can't be the one. Absolutely.
Yeah. At the same time, do I have to just like everything, even though I know it's not that good?
Why do you think we're not talking about Colin in Black and White right now? Right? Seriously. Yeah. Yes. 100%. We're in a moment, and these moments are very different, right? Like, to me, when I watch this movie, you have to watch this movie within its time. And we are in a time, certainly post-Ferguson, post-George Floyd, there are more opportunities for Black people to be in the room the last year and a half than there had been the previous 20 in terms of who was actually in top jobs. Like, when the number of firsts that people are trumpeting is really an embarrassment in the second decade of the 21st century. Mm. But the bottom line is, it's the first time we've been there. So the issue that I'm having, and there is a trend happening in film right now, I wish we could bring in Adnan Virk and talk about this, but one of the trends here is to essentially turn this Black history into an after-school special. Mm. That you've got these stories. On the one hand, you have the white executives that never let you in the room that don't want to offend the white audience. And you always have to make sure there's uplift and there's hope and there's all that. And you got to give the audience a reason, someone to cheer for. And especially if you're a white audience, the last thing you want to do is get beaten over the head with your grandparents and your own racism, right? That's not going to make you buy tickets. Now you've got this new generation, this new era of Black executives who are tired of watching Black people get beat up on camera or play pimps and hookers and everything else. Mm. And so they want uplift as well. It's for different reasons, but you end up at the same confluence point. And so the end result is you get these movies that really do feel infantile in a lot of ways, because nobody wants to be the one to make the story too raw. And so you saw it with Hidden Figures, after school special movie. You saw it with Selma, once again, sort of after school special movie. You saw it with, did I say Hidden Figures already?
Yeah.
You know,
42 was the one. 42, you mentioned.
42 Hidden Figures. You know, you also saw it again with this movie. You saw it with Harriet in a certain way as well. All of these different movies sort of have the same, you know, they have the same pattern of, you know, you see it with Colin in Black and White as well on Netflix, that, you know, they're reaching the same target audience. And that target audience is a much, much younger audience. And so you're not getting the rigor that you might get with other films, because these films are being asked to do so much. You're being asked to rehabilitate the Black male on screen, and watching, you know, King Richard, to Kate's point, you absolutely saw all of his flaws in a lot of ways be softened as harmless and rehabilitative because he's present, because Black men aren't supposed to be present in the first place. So you turn this into this remarkable thing that a guy cares about his kids, right? And so all of these things, the movie is asked to do a lot of work, and all of this work that the movie is being asked to do, and that the main actor is, you know, Will Smith is being asked to do, takes away from the story, because so much of this has to be rehabilitative. So much of it has to be, okay, we are going to sort of change the image of the characters of what we've done to Black people on screen. And so for me, I'm looking at this and I'm going, this isn't even for me. I don't necessarily feel like this story is being told for me. It was bothersome to me. To watch how many more. And I know people saw it as uplifting and they saw it as great because you know I'm not one of those guys. Let's just put it this way: I'm not one of those guys who needs to see Black people on screen for my own self-esteem. I already have self-esteem. I need to see Black people on screen doing the work, giving me something that's good, right? I don't need simple representation. Let's just put it that way, right? And so just because, it's like what Bomani always says, you know, I'm seeing a lot of Black, but I don't know how much excellence I'm seeing, right? And so, you know, so for me, the bar gets a little bit higher. And this movie was a good movie, but this movie was beneath what I was looking for because it had to do so much work. Also watching the fact that this movie ends without Serena going pro, that Serena Williams, the greatest tennis player of all time, isn't even a pro in this movie, made me think there's a sequel of some sort coming.
King Richard the Second.
Exactly, right? there's gotta be something else here, because all of the stuff that makes Serena where she is right now, we didn't get there. So you have to assume at some point we're gonna get there.
Amin, Howard, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.